Tonight on Job Talk, Dave and Doug follow the journey of a real marketing radical. From beginnings in radio to Fortune 500 offices, learn the real meaning of badge marketing and more right here on Job Talk.
Welcome to Job Talk, where our job is to make your job more fun and profitable. My name's Doug Minder.
I'm Dave Force.
And every week we talk with people around the country who are doing just what we all do, working for a living.
Doug, who do we have?
So tonight we're talking with Ed Dreistad, who's director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau in Lincoln City, Oregon. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Very well. Hey, listen, we are so interested in hearing your journey from your early days in radio through advertising, madvertising, as it were, and your journey through some of the industries you've had, the businesses you've built, and how the heck you ended up out in Oregon.
You've heard that old Grateful Dead song lately. It occurs to me, what a long, strange trip it's been. That's my career. I sit back and marvel at it myself.
So in the beginning, there was Ed,
mm-hmm.
and recently graduated from college. What happened?
Well, I graduated from Westminster College up in New Wilmington, Pennsylvania, with a double major, psychology and broadcasting,
okay.
with an emphasis in speech. That was basically because I had no idea what I was doing. I spent most of my college career taking intro to everything because it just was really cool. And junior year, my advisor close to tackled me while I was walking across campus going, "You have to declare a major," you know. And I sat down with him and it's like, "I don't know." And he's looking through everything I've taken. He goes, "You almost have a psych major here. A couple more courses, you're there." I'm like, "Okay, that sounds good." And he goes, "You can do speech." It's like, "Okay." He goes, "Which do you want?" I said, "Can I do them both?" He goes, "Yeah, why not?" So I graduated with a double major. You know, I had it in my head I was going to, you know, get into radio because it was just something I absolutely loved and did a lot of stuff on the college radio station and ended up getting a job with 13Q in Pittsburgh.
One of the Q stations in Pittsburgh, one of the famous.
Oh, yeah. And they came in, they did the Q format, thing took off like a skyrocket. And I got there. And honest to God, I had a front row seat to FM swallowing AM. to this day, I can't watch an episode of WKRP in Cincinnati without going, "I know those people and I've been there."
Which one were you, Ed?
Herb Tarlick.
Hey, Herb! Of course you were. It's perfect.
it was an interesting experience on a number of levels. I mean, I was right out of school, didn't have a clue about anything. And I'll never forget going into the sales manager's office for my interview. And he goes, "Ed, I want to show you something." And he reaches under his desk and he takes out the yellow pages, which back then was as thick as a phone book. And he slams it down on his desk and he goes, "There must be a million leads in here." He goes, "If you can get 1%, not even that 0.5%, get him to buy some ads on the station, you're going to be rich." I'm like, "Ooh, yeah, I'm there, you know, not a problem." And he goes, "Tell you what, I'm going to make you the head of co-op advertising." Whoa, title, you know, this is major.
Did you get a name tag to go with it?
Oh, yeah, and I had everything, you know. And what he had talked me into was coming on board with no sales list, no clients, no nothing to get started, and a future of nothing but cold calls.
Oh, perfect.
And I spent a very unsuccessful, very long period of time getting doors slammed in my face. And, I came out of it with no money whatsoever, and but very thick skin, which I think was a very good thing to have from that point forward. You know, uh-huh. there's not a whole lot you can do that will faze me.
That's great.
And it dates back to that time. And I went from 13Q to an ad agency. And I went in there as the media director, which was wonderful. I was also the entire media department, and I knew how to read the rating books and whatnot, and I would plan and buy their media schedules for their clients. And I did that for a while, and then one of the account executives quit, and my boss was walking through the hall, and without standing up and from my office, I yelled, "Hey, Stan," and he turned around and went, "What?" And it's like, "Can I have his job?" He went, "Yeah, sure." And that got me into account service.
I'm guessing your staff meetings were really short because there weren't many of you. It was both of them.
No, not at all. But it was one of those places where if you were the account exec, you were the copywriter. And if the art director was too busy, you know, you had to knock the ad out yourself. And, you know, it was very, very thinly staffed. And that's where I learned the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, but you learned a lot, right? I mean,
it was great. I made no money, just a little tiny retail shop. But honest to God, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Yeah. So when you tell the story of your life, it's like, you know, a lot of folks, me included, it sort of starts where you started. It sort of starts in black and white, and then it moves on to ektachrome and Kodachrome. And Kodachrome, you know, the sort of murky Kodak colors. And now I think we're up to 35 millimeter movies.
No, trust me, we're still in the murky.
Okay,
part.
We're still in the murky Kodachrome. Keep going. This is good stuff.
Yeah. No, it was kind of funny. I was there, but I'm in Pittsburgh, right? Mm-hmm. And this is before the steel industry completely collapsed. And, you know, I was like, there's got to be someplace better. And we picked up the Pittsburgh appearances of the Ice Follies. And the way that would work is they would give you this book full of promotions, and then they would fly in a front guy, and you would take them around and set up the grocery store promotion and this promotion and that promotion. And so this guy comes in, and I'm talking to him. It's like, man, you fly all over the country and do all this everywhere. It's like, where would you live? You know, what's better than Pittsburgh? He goes, Ed, anywhere is better than Pittsburgh. I said, excuse me, it's Cleveland. He goes, if I were you, I'd move to Atlanta. So I took a week off. I papered Atlanta with resumes. I flew down there. I did 3 interviews a day for a week. And I ended up getting hired by the place that was like the red hot creative shop that was, you know, bringing in business from like big blue chip advertisers like nobody in that town had ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing there was I was up against people with MBAs and New York experience and all this other crazy stuff. But I got the job over them because I was the only one to write a thank you note.
Ah, there you go. See, it's the handwritten note that personalizes everything. Mm-hmm. So that's it's reinforcing. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
So I went in there and got the job, and my account was Busch Gardens, and that's where I learned the theme park business.
That's a great story. Hey, we're talking to Ed Drystadt, who is director of the Convention and Visitors Bureau in Lincoln City, Oregon, telling us some great stories about his marketing and advertising career. Keep going, Ed.
Oh, yeah, but anyway, I went from that to working on Mellow Yellow and Fresca.
So is that how it works in advertising? You get slotted by product type experience, like chewing gum and cars and theme parks and all that?
Oh, yeah. You become an industry expert. Mm-hmm. And one of the wonderful things about the ad business is between new business pitches and changes and whatever, you probably learn 3 or 4 industries a year, easy. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've worked on a number of bizarre things. But with Mellow Yellow, Coke was having a problem with the brand because everything they did, they'd test it with the teams and they'd look at it and go, that's not us. Yeah. And, you know, not only do we not like that commercial, we hate you for doing it, we'll never drink this stuff, was kind of the reaction they were getting. Mm. Tom Little, who was the creative director of McDonald and Little, you know, we're in a meeting talking about the dilemma, and he goes, I've always thought that something magic happens at concerts, and I've always wondered if the magic can be captured. So long story short, and I think this is the only time this has ever happened, we convinced Coke to approve a concept with no storyboard, no details, just trust me, and this was like right when MTV was launched. Mm-hmm. And we ended up hiring, on the advice of Lee Abrams, who was MTV's programming consultant, a group called the Greg Kim Band, who was about to have a hit called Jeopardy, but they didn't realize it. So we got them on the cheap, rented out the Fox Theater in Atlanta, threw a concert, took their song Jeopardy and re-lyriced it so it was singing about Mellow Yellow, and had, it was like 6 or 8 roving 16-millimeter cameras where we threw a free concert and we filmed the kids. And however they looked, they looked. And however they acted. And we just captured what happened at the concert and then boiled it down to a 30-second TV spot. Coke tested it and it broke the bank on believability.
Wow. So it's reality television before reality television was around.
Exactly. I mean, I look back on it, it was like, okay, you know, we pioneered something that I didn't know was going to exist for another 10 years.
All right. Let me ask a question in the midst of this. You mentioned that some of your background do with psychology, and obviously psychology comes into the marketing advertising.
Yeah.
But my question, and trying to connect the dots, using that example you just said with the Mellow Yellow advertising, the concert, for myself, I don't necessarily drink a soda, in this case, a soda beverage, because I see a picture of kids having a good time at the concert. Mm-hmm. I either like or not like the flavor of the product.
Right.
I guess what you're bringing out is trying to get me to take the first sip as a result of that advertising, but to retain me as a customer, is that advertising or is that the quality of the product?
Well, there's a wonderful David Ogilvy quote where he says that, and keep in mind that advertising is only a piece. You know, that the old classic definition of marketing is price, product, promotion, and distribution. Advertising is the promotion part. You know, if it's a bad product or if the strategy is wrong, Ogilvy said that brilliant creative will act as the engines on an airplane in a steep dive. It will only hasten the crash. So I can get you to try the stuff, but if it sucks, I didn't do much good. I sold one can. You know, the interesting thing about like a Coca-Cola or a Budweiser or a Mellow Yellow, it's a thing called badge branding. Okay, where when you hold that product and you've got that logo in your hand, it acts almost like the badge that Marshall Dillon wore in Gunsmoke that said sheriff. It defined who he was. So you're borrowing identity from that product. And if that product is totally uncool and lame and horrible, you basically said you're a lame, horrible, nerd person and no one likes me. But if the brand image that comes off the advertising and is established for everything else is really cool and really likable and you are holding that logo, it's like, yeah, me too. That's how it works.
So in other words, you could get me, if I'm following you correctly,
yeah.
I taste a Mellow Yellow. I like the flavor of Mellow Yellow.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy the beverage.
Right.
But if in public, mm-hmm. I might be branding myself as a loser slash nerd, as you're saying,
right.
Then I would refrain from imbibing that beverage in public, but I might still enjoy it in the privacy of my own home.
Right. That's entirely right.
Interesting.
Yeah. One of the things I heard multiple times back during the old malt liquor project was that, you know, out in public, I'll drink Schlitz malt liquor, but when I'm in home, I've got refrigerator beer. And I'd be like, what's that? It's like the beer you keep in the back of the fridge that's really cheap that you don't want to have anybody see you drinking. You know, so yeah, there are definitely brands like that.
You know, it's the other thing is interesting, you know, it seems to me that if you have sort of like products, for example, let's just pick on macro brews because they're so much fun to pick on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got
yeah.
Budweiser and you got Miller
mm-hmm.
and you have Coors.
Yep.
And you have mm-hmm. slight distinctions by, you know, by dint of the people who brew them will admit it, slight distinctions between different types of brands. And there's not that much of a difference in terms of the taste.
Right.
But the signature difference then becomes the brand in the marketing.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you're Budweiser back in the day when you're doing super cool ads and hitting home runs, you know, in a blind taste test, let's be honest, you know, Bud, Coors, Miller. For the average, I'm talking about the average, not the craft brew guy or the home brewer, but the average consumer, the difference is going to be made by the image and the brand and the advertising at that point.
Exactly. Well, one of the dilemmas Budweiser was all up against was, and it's the same thing with like Marlboro cigarettes, the danger you have when you're a big brand like that and you're very popular and everybody's drinking it is that as the next generation comes along, the quickest way to death as a brand is to become my father's beer, which is why Budweiser always had things like the Budweiser Frogs and the Bud Bowl and all the crazy stuff they did. That was to keep it young and something that young people would discover, and it would be their beer, because if it ever became their father's beer, game over.
Which was the purpose behind the tagline, it's not your father's Oldsmobile.
That was a little bit too little too late, and having old in the name was probably not good.
They were fighting an uphill battle with that one.
I was going to say, yeah.
So Ed, we've gotten you as far as your theme park career, and then, but we still haven't gotten you out to Oregon.
Well, I worked for Busch Entertainment, where you and I worked,
right.
Busch Gardens, and we'll tell the Fabio story some other day.
Okay,
I don't think we have time for that.
That's fine.
But I literally ran away and joined the circus. I was working for an ad agency, and then one of the problems with working for an ad agency is they're always hiring like crazy because they just got the big account, or they're laying everyone else off because they just lost the big account. And I was at a shop where you could feel the walls quaking and there was plaster dust coming down from the ceiling. I mean, it was bad. Every piece of the business they had was in jeopardy for one reason or another. And I'm thinking, oh my God, been here before. I know what's going to happen. It's not going to be good. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to find a herd of zebras for a TV commercial. And I called my old client down at Busch Gardens in Tampa to see if we could film on the Serengeti plane down in the park
In black and white?
Was, zebras.
Was the spot in black and white?
No. Oh. Well, it was going to be in color, and all the zebras but one were going to be black and white. There was going to be one with red stripes.
Got it.
You know. Anyway, long story short, I flew down to look at the zebras. I came back, and they said, well, Ed, is it going to work? It's like, I don't know. I quit. And I literally ran away and joined the circus. I went from agency to the client side and went to work in the theme park business, which
great.
Is back when you and I met.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
I had the greatest exit interview when I left the agency. The deal was, if you just flat out quit, you had to go up to the president's office and sit down with him and explain to him why you were leaving. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting in my office. The phone rings. It's him. He goes, come up here. And I'm like, okay. So I walk up. He's standing in front of his door. He points me in his office. I walk in. He closes the door. He points at the couch. I sit down. He sits down across from me, looks in my eyes and said, why are you leaving? And I said, I got a job offer from an amusement park owned by a beer company. And he thought for a second and went, okay, I'll open the door and let me out. That was my exit interview.
What could be wrong with that?
He said, I'm losing a smart guy.
can't top that, you know. But I've worked for Busch Entertainment for 10 years, got the bright idea that I could go to work for this other company that had venture capital people circling it. I was going to own 5% of it. We're all going to get rich. And I got in there and started demanding reports and sales figures. Mm-hmm. And I found out I joined a house of cards that hit the wall and collapsed about a year later. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the first of many times. It's like, I'm just going to start my own company. And started a tourism marketing company that I eventually sold to a PR firm in Raleigh and moved from Raleigh to Atlanta, worked for Hirsch & Family Entertainment there for a while. Mm-hmm. Left again to start my own company with them as my main client. And then the recession hit because I was doing mainly sponsorship work. All the sponsor money dried up. And it was like, okay, I don't feel like even trying to build this thing back up again in this economy. And this job opportunity came up in Lincoln City, Oregon, where I can live in a beach town, have an entire city to play with, and be the head of their tourism operation, and that's where I am.
So, we have a lot of young listeners, and there's so many great lessons for them to hear. First of all, perseverance, persistence, reinventing yourself, rebranding yourself, and sticking to it. You know, and when stuff heads south, you try something else.
Yeah, and there are absolutely no guarantees. I mean, that the ad agency business is the most unstable thing in the world. And, I mean, you don't know day to day whether or not you still have your job mm-hmm. because all it takes is that big client going out the door and them having to cut back. But on the other hand, I mean, compared to anything else, the most interesting, the most bright, the most creative people live in those places.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade that experience for anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I met totally crazy people that no one would ever allow in the hallway of a corporation that were just brilliant, you know? And I think they purposely housed them there because they don't want them cluttering up the corporate headquarters. But just amazing, amazing, amazing people. When you and I worked together at Busch Gardens in Williamsburg, it dawned on me that those same folks were over in the entertainment department.
Well, that
I had a.
We take that as a compliment.
We had a clandestine ad agency mm-hmm. over in the entertainment department. I mean, I had composers and writers and just incredible people that. I mean, we did great stuff,
yes.
A lot of which was under the radar because I was supposed to be using an ad agency in Chicago instead.
Thank you for the compliment. Yeah. We'll take it. Hey, listen, what's the best thing? We got to run. I know you got to run. You've had a long day. What's the best thing about living out there in Oregon?
That it's so different. I'm just now having my first full year here.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, what comes to mind when you think beach?
Sand.
Sand, water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Soothing sounds.
Yeah.
Sunburn.
A mist.
Yeah.
Crowds.
Yeah. I come here, and this is the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
And, I mean, by this time tomorrow, we'll have 40-mile-an-hour winds coming off the ocean, sideways rains and gusts up to 70 miles an hour.
Sounds like a party.
It's so, so totally different than any place I have ever lived. and people love it.
Yeah.
I mean, they finally explained it to me the other day in terms that it finally clicked, that in Oregon, there is no bad weather, only inappropriate clothing. It's like, oh, okay.
That's perfect. Ed Drystad, thank you so much for spending time with us. These are great stories, really instructive for our listeners and kind of inspirational for us as well.
Yeah, and I'm feeling bad now because I did not give Lincoln City, Oregon justice. It's some of the most rugged, amazing, beautiful coast you've ever seen. It's very, very, very different,
right.
But different in a great way.
Right.
It was like moving to another planet, and I'm enjoying it just so much.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm learning why people love it. We'll talk about that again later.
Yeah, we follow your comments and your writings online, and it's clear you love the place. The place loves you, and I'm intrigued. Starting to learn more about it. I think we might have to go out there for a visit. Looks like a marvelous place to live.
I think you need to do a visit. You really do.
All right, Ed. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself. Thanks,
okay.
Ed. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for spending time with us today. We hope to hear from you next week.
Yeah, in the meantime, leave us a note on the blog and or send us a note at dave@jobtalkradio.org or doug@jobtalkradio.org.
Dave takes the good notes, Doug takes the bad notes.
I take the high road, Dave takes the low road.
It's a journey. It's a four-wheel drive journey. Hey, thanks again for being with us on jobtalkradio.org. We hope that you'll go to our website, leave a note, post a blog, send us an email. jobtalkradio.org.
That's jobtalkradio.org.